Greetings, fellow travelers through the liturgical year. This is Lisa Davis with another Feast Day Quick Take on the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. One of the most fascinating feast day investigations I've gotten to do so far. Miracles and wonders abound in the history of this feast of the Church, the seeds of which were planted, believe it or not, at the time of the apostles, took root more than 500 years ago, and continue to this very day. In researching the amazing and miraculous details, I've finally gotten to the bottom of a mystery. Maybe not a mystery to everyone, but one that's baffled me for 45 years. When I was 14 years old, our family became members of our very first traditional Catholic parish, a little church in Colorado that was consecrated under the patronage of Our Lady of Victory. I remember being told that this title was directly related to the victory of the Christians over the Mohammedans at Lepanto, a naval battle in the Mediterranean in 1571. But the image on the altar of our little church was Our Lady of Guadalupe, the miraculous image left on the cloak or the tilma of a native Aztec in Mexico in 1531. A difference of 40 years at about 6,500 miles and two very different cultures. I couldn't figure out the link. It didn't seem to make sense until I found the link. The bridge over the ocean, over the differences between peoples, over time and into eternity. See if you can figure it out as I did. The first thing that you have to know is that there are two Guadalupes in this story that spans the Christian era. I mean, there are, but there aren't. Hang in there with me and you'll see what I mean. The first Guadalupe was in Spain. It was a place name, the site of a famous and highly revered image of the Blessed Mother, but not the one you may be imagining. This story of Guadalupe begins in the 14th century, and like the story of Juan Diego that most of us are at least a little familiar with, we watch the progress of the humblest of men, in this case, a humble cowboy named Gil Cordero, who is going about his business like any other day, riding through the foothills in search of a missing cow. As he nears the Guadalupe River, he's stopped in his tracks by the apparition of a beautiful lady, our Blessed Mother, of course, who charges him to carry out a mission for her. He's to go to the church and instruct the local priests to return with him to the site where she has appeared and to dig. Convinced by the sincerity of the simple but pious Cordero, church officials send out a contingent who, after digging at the site, find a cedar statue of the Blessed Mother, obviously ancient, in the style of Sede Sapiente, or the Seat of Wisdom, with Christ Child on her lap. The statue, which is just a little over 2 feet tall, is referred to as a polychrome. In other words, it's painted in many colors and depicts the Blessed Mother with markedly dark skin. One of three so-called Black Madonnas of Spain, the Virgin of Guadalupe is thought to have been the long-lost statue carved by St. Luke the Evangelist. According to local legend, when Seville was taken by the Muslims in the year 712, the clerics who had long guarded the treasure, fleeing the city, were compelled to bury it in the hills near the Guadalupe River and Extremadura, where it was lost to history for 700 years. Once it was rediscovered through the guiding hand of the Blessed Mother, a shrine, of course, was built on the site, which became the great Guadalupe Monastery, the most important of the Castilian shrines to Our Lady in the Middle Ages, a famous site of pilgrimages. This statue, Our Lady of Guadalupe in Spain, though revered for centuries, was canonically crowned by Pope Pius XI in 1928. If you were Spanish in the 1500s, you would immediately recognize the name Guadalupe as referring to the shrine in Castile. So, moving on to Our Lady of Guadalupe, Mexico. Your first instinct, or at least it was mine, is to assume that the village or the church or the region where Juan Diego saw the Blessed Virgin in Mexico had been called Guadalupe after the famous Marian pilgrimage site in Spain. and the Marian title for this New World apparition was named for the geographic location where it occurred. But this is not so. Our Lady wasn't named for the site. The site was named for Our Lady. Located then and now in a suburb of Mexico City, the hill of Tepeyac, where the Blessed Mother appeared to Juan Diego, was only that. It had no other name than the Hill of Tepeyac. A village or city of Guadalupe did not exist in Mexico at the time of the apparitions, though the area was named the Villa de Guadalupe about 30 years later. So, where did the Marian title, including the word Guadalupe, come from? Well, it came from the Blessed Mother herself. She introduced herself with the now famous Marian title, not to Juan Diego, but to Juan Diego's uncle. Upon healing his uncle Bernardino of a grave illness, before anyone even knew about the image on the tilma, the beautiful lady instructed him to let it be known that her portrait was to be entitled, quote, "The Perfect Virgin, Holy Mary of Guadalupe." It seems clear that the Mother of God wanted the Spanish in Mexico to benefit from the connection with the well-loved Spanish shrine back home in Castile. But typical of her motherly consideration, the native Aztecs would have a special bond of recognition and understanding as well, because the word Guadalupe translates phonetically in their native tongue to the phrase, "the one who crushes the serpent." There are no accidents in the universe. The Blessed Mother knows exactly what she is about. Now, the Spanish clergy of early Mexico, faced with the challenges of a pioneer mission among the Aztecs, needed the influence of the Blessed Mother to turn her native children away from their murderous false gods, and she did not disappoint. Here is the history of the Guadalupe, Mexico apparitions of Our Blessed Mother to Juan Diego, taken from the first translation into Spanish from the earliest account written in the native language. This earliest document, known as the Nican Mopuhua, is the account of the apparitions given to indigenous scholar Antonia Valeriano by Juan Diego himself sometime before his death in 1548. About a century later, in 1649, Father Luis Lasso de la Vega, the vicar of the chapel of Our Lady of Guadalupe at Tepeyac, having come upon the native text, translated it into Spanish. And the following account is the English translation written in the 19th century. So, this is the English translation from the Spanish translation from the original native language, but as close to original as I think it's possible to get an account. Quote, Juan Diego, as a devout neophyte, nota bene, which means that he was newly converted, quote continues, Juan Diego was in the habit of regularly walking from his home to the Franciscan mission station at Tlatelolco for religious instruction and to perform his religious duties. His route passed by the hill at Tepeyac. At dawn on Saturday, December 9th, 1531, while on his usual journey, he encountered the Virgin Mary, who revealed herself as the ever-Virgin Mother of God, and instructed him to request the bishop to erect a chapel in her honor, so that she might relieve the distress of all those who call on her in their time of need. He delivered the request, but was told by the bishop, Fray Juan Zumarraga, to come back another day, after he had time to reflect upon what Juan Diego had told him. Also recorded in Father de la Vega's account are the words of the Blessed Mother to Juan Diego verbatim, quote, Juanito, she said to him, the most humble of my sons, where are you going? Know and understand well, you, the most humble of my sons, that I am the ever-Virgin Holy Mary, Mother of the true God, for whom we live, of the Creator of all things, Lord of heaven and earth. I wish that a temple be erected here quickly, so I may therein exhibit and give all my love, compassion, help, and protection, because I am your merciful mother, to you and to all the inhabitants on this land, and to all the rest who love me, invoke, and confide in me. Listen there to their lamentations, and remedy all their miseries, afflictions, and sorrows. and to accomplish what my clemency pretends, go to the palace of the Bishop of Mexico, and you will say to him that I manifest my great desire that here on this plain a temple be built to me. You will accurately relate all you have seen and admired, and what you have heard. Be assured that I will be most grateful and will reward you, because I will make you happy and worthy of recompense for the effort and fatigue in which you will obtain of what I have entrusted. Behold, you have heard my mandate, my humble son. Go and put forth all your effort. End quote. Later the same day, returning to Tepeyac, Juan Diego encountered the Virgin again and announced the failure of his mission, suggesting that because he was a, quote, a back frame, a tail, a wing, a man of no importance, end quote, she would do better to recruit someone of greater standing. But she insisted that he was whom she wanted for the task. Juan Diego agreed to return to the bishop to repeat his request. This he did on the morning of Sunday, December 10th, when he found the bishop more compliant. The bishop, however, asked for a sign to prove that the apparition was truly from heaven. Juan Diego returned immediately to Tepeyac, and encountering the Virgin Mary, reported the bishop's request for a sign. She condescended to provide one on the following day, December 11th, saying, quote, "Well and good, my little dear. You will return here tomorrow, so you may take to the bishop the sign he has requested. With this he will believe you, and in this regard he will not doubt you, nor will he be suspicious of you. And know, my little dear, that I will reward your solicitude and effort and fatigue spent on my behalf. Lo, go now. I will await you here tomorrow." By Monday, December 11th, however, Juan Diego's uncle, Juan Bernardino, had fallen sick, and Juan Diego was obliged to attend to him. In the very early hours of Tuesday, December 12th, Juan Bernardino's condition having deteriorated overnight, Juan Diego sent out to Tlatelolco to get a priest to hear Juan Bernardino's confession and minister to him on his deathbed. In order to avoid being delayed by the Virgin, and embarrassed at having failed to meet her on the Monday as agreed, Juan Diego chose another route around the hill. But the Virgin intercepted him and asked where he was going. Juan Diego explained what had happened, and the Virgin gently chided him for not having had recourse to her. In the words which have become the most famous phrase of the Guadalupe event and are inscribed over the main entrance to the Basilica of Guadalupe, she asked, "No estoy yo aquí que soy tu madre?" In other words, "Am I not here, I who am your mother?" The complete quote of the Blessed Mother, as it was later translated, continues, "Hear me and understand well, my littlest son, that nothing should frighten or grieve you. Let not your heart be disturbed. Do not fear that sickness, nor any other sickness or anguish. Am I not here who is your mother? Are you not under my protection? Am I not your health? Are you not happily within my fold? What else do you wish? Do not grieve nor be disturbed by anything. Do not be afflicted by the illness of your uncle, who will not die now of it. Be assured that he is now cured. Climb, my littlest son, to the top of the hill. There, where you saw me and I gave you orders, you will find different flowers. Cut them, gather them, assemble them, then come and bring them before my presence. My littlest son, this diversity of roses is the proof and the sign which you will take to the bishop. You will tell him in my name that he will see in them my wish, and that he will have to comply to it. You are my ambassador, most worthy of all confidence. Rigorously I command you that only before the presence of the bishop will you unfold your mantle and disclose what you are carrying. You will relate all and well. You will tell that I ordered you to climb to the hilltop to go and cut flowers, and all that you saw and admired, so you can induce the prelate to give his support, with the aim that a temple be built and erected as I have asked." Father de la Vega's translation continues, quote, "Obeying her, Juan Diego found an abundance of flowers unseasonably in bloom on the rocky outcropping where only cactus and scrub normally grew. Using his open mantle as a sack, with the ends still tied around his neck, he returned to the Virgin. She rearranged the flowers and told him to take them to the bishop. On gaining admission to the bishop in Mexico City later that day, Juan Diego opened his mantle. The flowers poured to the floor, and the bishop saw that they had left on the mantle an imprint of the Virgin's image, which he immediately venerated. The next day, Juan Diego found his uncle fully recovered, as the Virgin had assured him, and Juan Bernardino recounted that he too had seen her at his bedside, that she had instructed him to inform the bishop of this apparition and of his miraculous cure, and that she had told him she desired to be known under the title of Guadalupe. The bishop kept Juan Diego's mantle first in his private chapel, and then in the church on public display, where it attracted great attention. On December 26, 1531, a procession formed for the taking of the miraculous image back to Tepeyac, where it was installed in a small, hastily erected chapel. In the course of this procession, the first miracle was allegedly performed when an indigenous man was mortally wounded in the neck by an arrow shot by accident during some stylized martial displays executed in honor of the Virgin. In great distress, the indigenous carried him before the Virgin's image and pleaded for his life. Upon the arrow being withdrawn, the victim made a full and immediate recovery. End quote. In May of 1754, Pope Benedict XIV, in the papal bull Non Est Equidem, declared Our Lady of Guadalupe the patroness of New Spain, which at that time comprised Spanish Central and Northern America. Liturgical texts for the Mass in her honor and additions to the breviary for her feast day were approved at this time. On October 12, 1895, Our Lady of Guadalupe of Mexico was solemnly crowned in the name of Pope Leo XIII as Queen of the Mexican people. Interestingly enough, this was 33 years before the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Spain received the papal coronation. In 1910, Pope St. Pius X declared Our Lady of Guadalupe the official patroness, the Empress of the Republic of Mexico. Without dispute, the patronage of Our Lady of Guadalupe transformed Mexico, replacing the brutal pagan religion of the Aztecs with the fruits and graces of the true faith almost overnight. After the miracle of the Tilma, Bishop Zumarraga immediately began the construction of a chapel at the site of the apparitions, where Juan Diego spent the rest of his life guarding the image of the beautiful lady. Word spread almost miraculously, and natives of the region came from everywhere to see the Heavenly Mother, who looked like them. In 1622, the chapel was replaced by the First Church of the Virgin of Guadalupe, and by 1709, construction had begun on the first Basilica of Guadalupe, which has sadly been replaced by an abominable modern structure since that time. At the time of the apparitions in Mexico, Europe was in the grip of the Protestant revolt, and countless souls were lost as the Church scrambled to launch the Counter-Reformation. But the Blessed Mother, with nothing but her own gentle self, balanced the dearth of grace on the globe. The Aztec religion, which had held powerful sway among millions of natives in the region, was especially demonic in character, involving human sacrifice on an unbelievable scale. The earliest missionaries must have believed that such a horror would take generations to exorcise. But by 1541, only 10 years after her apparition to Juan Diego, a historian of the time recorded that 9 million people in New Spain had converted to Catholicism, twice as many souls as had been lost to Lutheranism, and that was just the beginning. In spite of the scourge of modernism in the last century, and even the years of persecution during the Cristero Wars in the early 20th century, the faith continued to prosper. Today, 80% of Mexicans still identify themselves as Catholic, though What exactly that means anymore is anyone's guess. Regardless, the cultural identity has remained, if nothing else, after more than 500 years, and Mexico was instrumental in the founding of the traditional movement. In contrast, as of 2020, only 45% of Europeans in the EU call themselves Catholic, and for the record, Gallup says 25% of Americans still claim to be Catholic, and most of them seem a little embarrassed to admit it these days. Not so with our Mexican neighbors. If not a symbol of religious piety, the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe has become a statement of Mexican identity to be found everywhere Mexicans congregate. But this miraculous image of the Blessed Mother of Guadalupe, what does it actually mean? Historians of the Church, and otherwise, have not neglected this question, not only to Old World Catholics, but most especially to the uninitiated native people of New Spain. The symbolism of the apparition on the image of the Tilma was deep and full of meaning. Here is a summary of what I found, gleaned from the official website of the Shrine in Mexico City, as well as several other corroborating sites and scientific researches online. Amazingly, there is music in Our Lady of Guadalupe's mantle. According to mathematician Fernando Ojeda, the Instituto Superior de Estudios Guadalupanos, he said, gives me the mission of studying the image by applying the only science that has not been done before in image studies, mathematics. He goes on to explain, I reasoned the following. If the stars of the mantle are the constellations of the sky at the time of its impregnation, the dress represents proportionally the main hills and volcanoes of the orography of Mexico. If the whole image keeps the ratio, then it has perfect symmetry, and therefore it has music. I considered that each star according to its position, and each flower center according to its position, was a musical note. A music expert then superimposed a piano keyboard and documented the notes expressed by each point of the flowers and stars. When Ojeda loaded the notes into a music computer program, he obtained a perfect melody complete with harmony. And here is the composition, written in the stars on Our Lady of Guadalupe's mantle. The rays of light surrounding the lady remind us of the, quote, woman clothed with the sun from the apocalypse. The light, like a halo, we know as a sign of sanctity, but the rays of the sun would also be recognized by the native people as a symbol that they equated with their highest god, a sun god. Thus, the image of the lady comes forth standing in front of the sun. She comes to announce the god who is greater than their sun god. Our Lady stands upon the moon. For the Mesoamericans of the 16th century, the moon was a god of the night. By standing on the moon, the Blessed Mother shows that she is more powerful than their god of darkness. But as Catholics, we're reminded of the biblical symbolism once again. We know she is the woman of the Apocalypse, chapter 12, verse 1. Quote, and there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. End quote. The Blessed Mother has been shown in Catholic art throughout the centuries in the visage of the Immaculate Conception, as well as the Assumption, with the moon under her feet. So several lessons and associations apply. I think we have adequate historic precedent to equate the present moon with another scourge of evil that cooperates with the serpent in our world. More on that in a minute. The eyes of Our Lady of Guadalupe look down demurely, with humility and compassion. To the native people, this signified that she was not a god, since in their iconography, the god stares straight ahead, eyes wide open. We can imagine this captures the moment when Our Lady looked tenderly down upon Juan Diego and said, "Do not be troubled or weighed down with grief. Am I not here who am your mother?" The angel supporting the lady testifies to her royalty. To the Mesoamerican Indians, only kings, queens, and other dignitaries would be carried on the shoulders of someone. The angel is transporting the lady to the people as a sign that a new era has begun. Our Lady's mantle is blue, green, or turquoise. To the native people, this was a royal color, or one that signified a deity. The limbus, or gold border of her mantle, is another sign of nobility. The stars on the lady's mantle do more than signify musical notes. To the natives of Juan Diego's time, her being clothed with them symbolized the lady's dominance over stars, which the Aztecs also worshipped. Representing heaven to the natives as they would to any other culture, Our Lady showed herself as the queen of heaven, but with the tender expression of a humble and loving mother. The stars also prove the supernatural character of the images in another amazing way. The research of Father Mario Rojas Sanchez and Dr. Juan Homero Hernandez of Mexico, published in 1983, show that the stars on the lady's mantle are exactly as the stars of the winter solstice would have appeared just before dawn on the morning of December 12, 1531. Also, the constellation Virgo, which represents virginal purity, is over her heart, and the constellation Leo, the lion, is over her womb, over Jesus. The perfect placement of the stars and their various constellations proves the infinite intelligence behind the miraculous image. The color of Our Lady's dress is rose or pale red. Some have interpreted this as the color of dawn, symbolizing the beginning of a new era. The gold encircled cross brooch under the neck of Our Lady's robe is a symbol of sanctity as well as of royalty, as the predominant black cross indicates clearly that her God is that of the Spanish missionaries and Jesus Christ, her son. The black belt or sash high on her waist was an Aztec symbol of maternity, while her hair, which falls freely around her shoulders, indicated that she was a virgin maiden to the Indians. The high position of the black sash and the slight swelling of the abdomen shows that the lady is with child. The image of Our Lady of Guadalupe is the only approved apparition in which Our Blessed Mother is indeed carrying our Lord. The Blessed Mother's hands, folded in prayer, show that there is another above her, and her fingers point to the cross on the brooch to show who that is. While these are a good sampling of the symbols of the miraculous image Our Blessed Mother left for us, there have also been a number of amazing facts surrounding the image that cannot be explained, except that God wished to honor his mother and allow her through a multitude of ongoing miracles to change hearts and save souls. Here's a list of proofs that the tilma is God's hand at work. First of all, the actual creation of this image cannot be explained by science. There is no undersketch, no sizing, no protective varnish on the image. There are no brush strokes. And though it appears on the surface of an extraordinarily rough textile, the lines of the image somehow appear perfectly smooth and straight. After almost 500 years, the tilma shows no signs of deterioration, though the fabric of the tilma is woven from the threads of the maguey cactus, which should have disintegrated within 15 to 20 years, 30 years at the most. But the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe has remained perfectly intact for 492 years without fading or cracking. What's more, it was subjected to candle smoke for many years, which should have accelerated the process of deterioration. In 1778, a worker accidentally spilled strong nitric acid onto a large portion of the image. yet only slight stains can be seen in the upper right corner. Additionally, in 1921, communist terrorists during the Cristero War planted a bomb in flowers placed on the altar, directly beneath the image. When the bomb detonated, the altar rail and windows 150 feet away were shattered, and a brass crucifix was bent like a pretzel. But the image of Our Lady was left completely intact. The image seems to increase in size and change colors due to an unknown property of the surface and the substance of which it's made. The change of Our Lady's skin tone, for example, is distinctly observable. At one distance, she appears to be a Native American, but at another distance, she appears of European descent, and no human artist can duplicate this effect. Several images can be seen reflected in the eyes of the Virgin. They are believed to be those present at the moment the miraculous image was revealed. Juan Diego, Bishop Juan de Zumarraga, Juan Gonzalez, and the interpreter, among others. The distortion and placement of the images in the reflection are identical to what is produced in a normal eye, as they would appear on the round surface of the eye. No human painter could have foreseen putting infinitesimally small images into the eyes of the Virgin so that later advances in technology could detect them. Not to mention the fact that the images are just too tiny to have been produced by hand. The size of this scene is incredibly small, 1/100th of an inch. A Peruvian ophthalmologist, Jose Aste Townsman, examined the eyes of Mary on the tilma at 2,500 times magnification and was able to identify 13 people in both eyes at different angles and proportions, just as human eyes would reflect such an image. The image of Our Lady, amazingly, always registers at 98.6 degrees, the temperature of the human body. It is a scientifically measured fact that no matter what the surrounding temperature, season, or weather, the image remains at a constant 36.5 Celsius or 98.6 Fahrenheit. And, amazingly again, a fetal heartbeat has been detected when a stethoscope is held over Our Lady's womb. Finally, to pull everything together and tie it in a bow, let's go back to the beginning for a minute, to the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Extremadura, Spain. Remember that this image of Our Lady of Guadalupe is a statue reportedly carved by St. Luke, rediscovered in the 14th century. It had become the focus of particular devotion by the Spanish when Christendom found itself endangered during the Crusades. And the great weapon, Our Lady's Rosary, had finally been added to the arsenal of the Christian force. The Holy League, formed by Pope St. Pius V in 1571 to shut down the advance of the Muslim hordes in the Mediterranean, took to heart the necessity of prayer in the conflict. The story goes that at this time, 40 years after the apparitions in Guadalupe, Mexico, hearing of the great battle being waged, the Archbishop of Mexico City, guardian of Villa Guadalupe, commissioned a duplicate painting of the miraculous image of Our Lady on the tilma. Catholic writer Rachel Schrader continues the story, quote, "The Archbishop touched the replica to the original and sent it to Philip II, telling him to mount it on one of the ships sailing against the Turks. His directive was obeyed. Our Lady's image sailed into battle on the mast of the ship of the Genoese Admiral Giovanni Andrea Doria." That was not all. Pius V asked that all the inhabitants of Christian Europe pray the rosary for the success of the offensive. The Holy League's forces prayed it as well, with every man being given a set of rosary beads before the battle. We can wonder, did the Turks catch sight of the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe? What must they have been thinking when they saw, affixed to the mast of a Christian ship sailing against them, the image of a beautiful maiden shining like the sun, with stars on her mantle, and the crescent moon, the symbol of Islam, under her feet." End quote. We know the rest of this story. By the intercession of the Blessed Mother, the outnumbered Holy League miraculously defeated the Muslim forces on October 7, 1571. After the battle was won, King Philip II of Spain, knowing his debt to the Virgin Mother, offered to Our Lady of Guadalupe in Spain a lantern captured from the Turks' flagship, according to her, the victory. But it was the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe as imprinted upon Juan Diego's tilma that flew on the flagship of the Armada, and it is this image of Our Lady of Guadalupe that you will see to this day represented as Our Lady of Victory. The image that used to hang on the lectern of the first church that I ever assisted at the True Mass of the Ages, the same Mass that Juan Diego and Gil Cordero and King Philip II would have known. And of course, the bridge between the two Guadalupes, between Spain and Mexico, the bridge across all ages of the Church, the bridge that spans the hardest hearts, is the Blessed Mother. She who crushes the head of the serpent, she who is victorious over the crescent, she whose sole interest is in building bridges to her divine Son. Prayer to Our Lady of Guadalupe, approved with an indulgence of 500 days by Pope St. Pius X in August 1908. Our Lady of Guadalupe, mystical rose, make intercession for the Holy Church, protect the Sovereign Pontiff, help all those who invoke Thee in their necessities, and since Thou art the ever-Virgin Mary and Mother of the true God, obtain for us from Thy most Holy Son the grace of keeping our faith, sweet hope in the midst of the bitterness of life, burning charity, and the precious gift of final perseverance. Amen. Our Lady of Guadalupe, pray for us. And a special greeting and prayers to our good friend, Father Carlos Borja, on the anniversary of his ordination.